KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission. Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
Coming up, we're finding out whether Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood was a hangout spot for civil rights icon Cesar Chavez.
He was a common figure because Carmen Flores lived right next to where the Unity Council is on Fruitvale and Foothill today.
And we'll hear the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
It's a 1991 Honda Accord wagon, so it's like the old school car. We go to the other side, now watch the reactions. Open that door, ain't nothing but games, TVs, controllers, wires, that's all it is.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stick around. If you've ever been to Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood, chances are you saw Cesar Chavez's name somewhere. A library, a park, an educational center are some of the places named after the civil rights icon. He inspired the formation of social justice organizations in the community. Chavez fought for fair treatment of farmers and Mexican Americans. He co-founded the United Farm Workers Union back in 1962. Chavez's name is all around the neighborhood, but did he ever visit the Fruitvale area? That's what one listener asked our Hey Area team to investigate. Hey Area is a project where listeners ask us questions and we find the answers. Reporter Janae Darden heads to Oakland and traces Chavez's steps.
Probably in my late 20s there.
Oakland City Council member Noel Gallo shows me and his assistant an old photo in his downtown Oakland office.
With the mustache?
With the mustache, cool long hair. I used to have hair longer than Maida at one time. Yeah, so he was very close to our family.
That he, Gallo, is referring to is Cesar Chavez. The photo was taken at the Unity Council building in the Fruitvale neighborhood, a diverse community with a large working-class Latino population. Fruitvale is part of Gallo's district. It's also where Gallo grew up and still lives. Gallo first met Chavez around the neighborhood when he was a boy. Years later, Gallo formed a bond with Chavez when he became a young activist.
And you look so proud. You're like, your chest is sticking out. You're like so excited.
Well, yeah, those were good days.
But then he became a friend, and so.
Yeah, he was a very humble, kind guy. Not loud, didn't want to be recognized that he's there.
Chavez's ties to Oakland are deeper than taking pictures with admirers. Oakland was one of the first places he trained to be an organizer.
Oakland was one of his developing stages, starting off with a community services organization.
Chavez was an apricot farmer in San Jose when he learned of the Community Service Organization, a Latino civil rights group. They led voter registration drives and legislation campaigns for immigrants. Chavez was frustrated by the injustices against farmers of color, such as low pay, inhumane living conditions, and use of child labor. So he joined the organization in 1952. Not long after, he spent 4 months in Oakland starting a chapter there.
But eventually, you know, Cesar Chavez graduated from that and moved on to union organizing, labor organizing, specifically with the farm workers.
Before we founded the union, we experienced some successes in voter registration, in politics, in battling racial discrimination. But deep in my heart, I knew I could never be happy unless I tried organizing the farm workers.
Chavez gave that speech to the Commonwealth Club decades after he co-founded the United Farm Workers in 1962 with Dolores Huerta and other farm worker organizers. Gallo was just a boy when the UFW formed and remembers Chavez's frequent visits to the Fruitvale neighborhood.
He was a common figure because Carmen Flores lived right next to where the Unity Council is on Fruitvale and Foothill today.
Carmen Flores was the chief representative for the United Farm Workers in the area.
So you would always on a regular basis see Dolores Huerta because she was one of the godmothers of some of the kids that Carmen had. And Cesar Chavez would always be there, so that became a hangout.
Councilman Gallo and I drive past Flores' house and the Unity Council building, where he took the photo with Chavez that hangs in his office. We cruise around the neighborhood, and Gallo points out another spot on Memory Lane.
That used to be a Safeway site.
So where this Walgreens is?
And that's where, and I used to live right down the street.
And that's where you have the boycott?
Well, this is where we became professional protesters. I ain't got nothing to do on Saturday or Sunday, and I used to look out the door here, hang out, and go up to Hamilton Middle School up or Junior High School. And the schools, and we used to see people out there marching and picketing, making a lot of noise. So we would go grab a sign and join.
The United Farm Workers boycotted the Safeway grocery chain in the late 60s. They were calling for all grocery stores to refuse to carry produce grown by agricultural businesses who denied farm workers the right to unionize. Lauren Areza, author of To March for Others, The Black Freedom Struggle and the United Farm Workers, tells me more.
So Safeway was the largest grocery chain on the West Coast, an incredibly powerful corporation, refused to stop carrying products that the UFW was boycotting. So they did this with grapes, but they also did it with lettuce.
Safeway wasn't only on the farm workers' bad side. The Black Panther Party had a problem with the grocery store, too. Areza says the store wouldn't donate food to the Panthers' free breakfast program for children, which they started in 1969 after studies found poor kids struggled in school because they were hungry in the mornings.
When the UFW and the Black Panther Party realized that Safeway was really not supporting either of them, they decided to join forces. So they would picket in front of Safeway stores together.
Areza writes the Panthers were one of the UFW's most vocal supporters of the boycott. They found creative ways to drive down Safeway's business.
The Panthers had a motor pool. So as people approached a shop, they would say, you know, please don't shop here. We'll drive you to Lucky's, which does support our boycotts, and drive you home. That worked incredibly well and ended up closing a Safeway store in West Oakland for a period.
The boycott was not the only notable moment between the two organizations. The United Farm Workers protested against the government killing and imprisonment of Black Panthers. Chavez said, "We may not agree with the philosophy of the Black Panther Party, but they are our brothers, and nonviolence extends to standing up for whomever is persecuted." The sentiment was reciprocated. In this 1971 clip from KPIX News, Black Panther Elaine Brown speaks about intimidation practices used against farmers.
You have people that are armed with weapons. Everyone knows the United Farm Workers Union has remained and has always been a nonviolent organization, and yet violence of that nature is being perpetrated against them.
Chavez even supported the Black Panthers in their political aspirations. He endorsed Black Panther co-founder Bobby Seale's 1973 run for mayor. In a press release, Chavez and the UFW said, "We laud Bobby Seale's approach to gaining political power for his people and all poor people in the city of Oakland."
Bobby Seale created a platform that really addressed the diversity of people in Oakland. And so he included a few things in his platform that appealed to Mexican Americans, but also specifically to farm workers. And then when Chavez would come to Oakland to campaign against Proposition 22, he would also campaign on behalf of Bobby Seale.
While Seale was campaigning to be mayor, Proposition 22 threatened farm workers' rights to organize and boycott. The Panthers galvanized Black voters to vote no. Black Panthers and the UFW's teamwork defeated the proposition on Election Day. The UFW continued supporting the Panthers even after Seale lost his run for mayor. Councilman Guile drives me back to my car. We see homeless tents on sidewalks. Across the street from a Mexican grocery store is a remodeled apartment building. It's near a Google bus stop. A lot has changed since Chavez died in 1993. But Latinos are still facing the same obstacles, such as pay inequality and immigration issues.
So if he was living today, what do you think he would say and what do you think he would do? Because I know a lot of people, too, are probably feeling a little hopeless right now.
The reality is we got to not only keep the dream alive, but giving back to your neighborhood.
I began to realize that the only hope was in organizing. And people like me had to develop the skills it would take to organize, to educate, to help empower the Chicano people.
Chavez came to Oakland more than 65 years ago to develop his organizing skills and empower his people. Today, there are children in Fruitvale who read at the library and study in the educational center that bear his name. And many people have benefited from service organizations in the neighborhood that are inspired by Chavez's activism. Cesar Chavez's grassroots legacy definitely runs deep in the Fruitvale community. In East Oakland, I'm Janae Darden for Cross Currents.
The Unity Council is hosting their annual Cesar Chavez Day celebration on Saturday, March 24th in the Fruitvale neighborhood. That story was part of Hey Area, KALW's collaborative reporting project. If you've got a question for Hey Area, head to our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
It's a 1991 Honda Accord wagon. So it's like the old school car. You go to the other side, now watch the reactions. Open that door, ain't nothing but games, TVs, controllers, wires, that's all it is.
Go! Go, Luigi, go!
It's like, it's our childhood.
Oh my God,
yeah, that was me, haha.
Come on.
So, do you know what that was? Well, Audio Academy fellow Amber Miles has the story.
I'm on the corner of 16th and Valencia. It's Friday night. Shops are closing up, and folks that live out here are settling into those now vacant doorways. Traffic on the street sounds frustrated, revving, waiting, and beeping, as the last of the commuters surface from the BART station and breeze by. No one seems to notice a man in a poofy red and white mushroom hat, sorting through a tangled web of colored wires and extension cords. Not when he sets down four metal folding chairs, creating a makeshift living room at the sidewalk's edge. Not even when he hoists a big old-school tube TV and slides it across the roof of his car. They might not see it yet, but his unassuming hatchback is undergoing a transformation.
I'm Mo, and it's called Mo Gaming, the retro gaming car.
Almost every Friday for nearly 2 years now, Mo and his car have been out here on this corner.
It's a 1991 Honda Accord wagon, so it's like the old-school car.
And in a matter of minutes, it'll have another TV up on the roof, and those will be surrounded by a collection of classic gaming consoles. Flashing rope lights strung around the perimeter, wires carefully woven in and out its barely cracked windows, and specially made signs duct taped in place to conceal how it all works. It's a secret, but rumor has it, the car is fueled by magic.
But it's not really the car that they pay attention to the most, it's just about the games.
And Mo has a lot of games.
Let's go. We got GoldenEye, we have Smash Brothers, Super Mario 64,
Donkey Kong,
we have Mario Kart Double Dash, Sonic the Hedgehog Collection, Punch-Out, Tecmo Bowl, Rad Racer, and a couple other games.
Mario Kart on the Wii, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, Super Mario World, NBA Jam, Donkey Kong Country, Pac-Man 2, Mortal Kombat, No Mercy Wrestling, Mario Kart, Madden 99, Madden 2000, Star Fox 64, we have Metroid, Kirby's Adventure, Ninja Gaiden, Last Console, Tomb Raider, Frogger.
Oh man, that's so much stuff.
But every night still starts with the same classic crowd pleaser.
We got Mario Kart. You go to the other side now, watch the reactions.
Mo is right. As soon as the game boots up, people stop giving him weird looks and start paying attention. Within minutes, three young guys roll up, looking to play.
Yo, boss, we got the Mario Kart.
That's Dakota Smith. He's a regular. And tonight, he's psyched to introduce his old college friends, Nick Simpson and Spencer Lamb, to the Mo Gaming experience.
I'm Toad. I already caught it. No, I'm Toad. I love Toad.
Childhood icon.
Spencer picks Bowser.
He handles the inside curves beautifully. Always has.
And Nick.
What joint am I?
Nick's inadvertently picked Luigi.
Okay.
A medium-weight humanoid plumber with an Italian accent and green overalls.
Here we go.
They're off. Bowser and Toad burst forward from the starting line as Luigi spins out. He's already way behind.
Go! Go, Luigi, go!
They're racing down a multicolored track suspended deep in the black of space.
Rainbow Road is difficult. You can fall off the course at any moment.
It's absolutely insane.
Do you remember the first time you saw Mo in his car?
Oh, hell yeah. It was literally outside Dr. Teeth. It was a Wednesday, and this guy had his whole van. I was like, what's going on with this van? It's got all the lights, it's got all the sounds. And then next thing I see, it's got an N64 hooked up to his car, and I said, where do I hand my money to?
On the screen, Luigi dodges banana skins as he struggles to catch up with Toad and Bowser. Their real-life counterparts are leaning so far forward in their rickety metal folding chairs that the back legs are lifting off the sidewalk. Passers-by linger and crowd around, watching and vibing off the collective nostalgia, but the guys are too absorbed in the race to notice. It's pedal to the metal and thumb to the controller. Luigi swerves, steadies himself, and hurls a banana into Bowser's path.
Oh my god, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that was me, haha. Oh, yeah, I may be in last, but I'm doing damage.
Bowser takes a hit, and with the finish line in sight, Toad takes the lead.
Your boy's about to win! Right now!
Damn it!
Rainbow Road champ!
Just for the record, Rainbow Road champ, Dakota Smith.
Dakota sucks.
Aside from the actual winning, it's just good to know that we're playing Mario Kart. Good old-fashioned competition, racing, talk shit to your friends. Ideal childhood dream right here. And this guy, he provides it throughout the SF area.
That's right. Mo and his car get around. Monday, they're at Milk Bar in the Hate. Wednesdays, they're outside Dr. Teeth on 19th and Mission. Thursdays, they inch down the block to Beauty Bar. And then Friday and Saturday, you'll find them right here, outside Bon Bar on 16th and Valencia.
He's doing a good service.
In a way, most like a real-life Mario, with a healthy dose of MacGyver on the side. Got a clogged pipe, a broken light? Mo's your guy. By day, he makes his living as a handyman.
If your electricity go out in your house, give me a battery and a light fixer, I could brighten your whole house up.
By night, he's using those same unconventional problem-solving skills to jury-rig a jalopy into a sentimental street arcade and bring childhood memories back. Mo's memories mostly revolve around the original Nintendo Entertainment System, aka the NES, with Duck Hunt, Super Mario Brothers, Punch-Out, Contra, actually, a lot of the games he has now. But regardless of what generation you're a part of or what system you grew up on, Mo wants everyone to have the same feeling when they see his setup. The sharp and sweet pang that hits you when you see something from your childhood out in the wild adult world.
Walking up the street and see Mario Kart, and that's what you play as a kid, or are you going to sit down and play? Because it's only 3 minutes. 3 minutes to bring back a childhood memory, and that's what I call priceless.
And he means that literally. He doesn't put a price tag on Mo Gaming. It's always free to play.
The car is idling. We're burning gas, so we ask for tips or a donation.
Money to fill his tank back up with gas, so he can get home at the end of the night and be back out here again the very next day. If there's anything left over, he invests in more games. People are constantly requesting old favorites, and some of them are hard to find.
But they're out there. You just have to go out there, cross that bridge, San Jose Way, Berkeley Way, Hayward Way.
He wants to provide everyone with the games they loved because he remembers what it was like when he was a kid, growing up in the Bayview. It wasn't always easy to get your hands on a controller and just play. Eventually, Mo's family did get an NES, and he was stoked.
I didn't want to go to school. I didn't really want to do anything but play video games. But when your parents are smarter than you and can take one wire to control the whole game, oh, you're going to get up and go to school.
And now you stay up all night playing video games.
Yep, now I can stay up all night playing video games.
And what does your family think about it?
They think it's great. You know, I'm not breaking the law. I'm not going to jail. I'm not taking nothing from nobody. All the establishments that I park in front of, they all know me by first name. They all love me.
Oh, yeah, we're cool. He's always out here.
That's Jerry Muhammad, the bouncer at Bon Bar. He says having Mo in his retro gaming car parked outside has made checking IDs a lot more entertaining.
I'll see like full-grown adults walk by and freak out like, oh my god! They'll come flying out of the bar or from up the streets, like pictures and cameras flying, like they'll drop whatever they're doing and just enjoy themselves for hours on end. There's never any problems, so it's good, you know? Just a positive, upbeat atmosphere.
And really, that's what Mo is trying to do with Mo Gaming. Keep the streets a bit safer, and make people happy. Later in the night, as revelers spill out of the bars and scarf down Mission street dogs, Giovanna Lopez stumbles across Mo Gaming. She was supposed to be catching up with friends at a bar down the street, but she just had to stop and check it out, even if she didn't have anyone to play with.
This is a great idea. It's like, it's our childhood. It brings back like all sorts of people, like anybody who's ever played this game, and it's not just like one race or like one color, like whatever. Like, it's everybody. Anybody plays this game.
Giovanna says she wishes there was more stuff like this to do on a night out.
Like community things where like people could like have conversations with instead of just like drink and like eat, you know, like playing a game, be more interactive with each other. That's way better and it's enjoyable for everybody.
Then, as if by some sort of Mario Kart miracle on 16th Street, a stranger comes over and asks her to play.
You wanna race me?
Let's all race. Come on. I just said it's a community event. This is great.
And Mo really wants to expand the Mo gaming experience so even more people can play. Right now, he's trying to raise money to level up.
The next thing for me is a school bus. Just a strictly video game retro bus. That's what it would be.
Eventually, he'd love to have a whole fleet of retro gaming buses. But until that day comes, you'll find Mo and his hatchback out here, continuing to do what they do best.
When you find something you like to do, you keep at it. And that's what I found that I like to do. Hang out and play video games and bring childhood memories back to people.
In The Mission, I'm Amber Miles for Cross Currents.
Well, we had a lot of correct guesses this week, but there can be only one winner, and that is Catherine Fernandez. Congratulations, Catherine. We're sending you a KLW t-shirt. And for the rest of you, where do you think we should record next? Give us a call. Let us know. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And that's the show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Andrew Seltzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Jackie Sajiko, and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by San Francisco band Plush. They call their music sob rock, and they're playing the Rickshaw Stop this Sunday. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Starting Monday, Cross Currents will be airing a special week-long series on the impacts of lead poisoning in the Bay Area. We'll meet families caring for children with lead poisoning, find out lead's connection to the Bay Area housing market, dig into the data, and see whether the problem in our region may be even worse than current numbers reveal, and we'll explore local solutions to this hidden problem.
Our plan was for lead poisoning to be gone. Eradicated by 2010, and yet we're still getting too many cases.
That's starting Monday at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News.